Hey, it's Michael over at Random Troy Radio.
And this is Alicia.
And we are going to give you a free preview of what we're doing on Patreon starting this week for 2 weeks, a 10-part preview series of the USC Trojans going into fall camp.
Yeah, we're going to look at every position group, talk through who's coming back, who's coming in, and what it all is going to look like. Like, you know, what to expect from them in fall camp and in the season, what they need to do, what we hope they do, all that kind of stuff, breaking down, you know, getting down and detailed with discussing pretty much every guy on the roster.
Yep, it's a 10-part series starting today over on Patreon, but the first one you can listen to here on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher and all that. But if you dig it, head over to Patreon, patreon.com/randomtroy. You get all of our bonus episodes for $5.55 a month. For $10, you can join our Slack channel and talk to us anytime you want. Let's get on with the show. Everybody, welcome back to Reign of Troy Radio. Here on Patreon, it is the start of our position preview podcast series. Here on Patreon, we are going to start on defense this time, leading into the 2019 USC football season. This is going to be a 10-part series, talking every single weekday from here until next Friday for the next 2 weeks about USC position groups leading you into the season. We're going to start the defensive line. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joined along with my co-host, Alicia Deratolo.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Alicia. It is time for position previews. The season is right around the corner, and since this is the second year we're doing this, it's weird to say that this is my new favorite thing, because we haven't been doing it that long, but this is kind of like my new favorite thing, because this is the ultimate sign that the season is near. We're 2 weeks away from fall camp. 2 freaking weeks. This is the longest off season of our lives, and suddenly it's coming to an end abruptly.
I had that realization when Gavin Morris tweeted on this past week that, or I suppose it would be called last week, that this would be his last Saturday off for a very long time. And it kind of hit me like, oh yeah, can relate. And all mm-hmm. of a sudden, I'm sitting here thinking, like, what am I going to do for Throwback Thursday next week? And then I realize, like, yo, Alicia, you're not going to have time to do a Throwback Thursday because Pac-12 Media Day and fall camp previews and this, that, and the other thing. So it is very much arrived. We're about to get very, 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 very busy. The return of fall camp also means the return of practice car casts, the return of Inside the Scrum, the return of all that kind of stuff, so that the season is now officially barreling towards us. And it kind of just happened.
Yeah, kind of just happened indeed. And here on Patreon for Reign of Troy Radio is where you can get all of that stuff. We're glad to have you. Glad to have you aboard for another season of USC Football Talk here with Reign of Troy, especially on Patreon. Let's get into this. Talk about the D-line. This is an interesting position group because they don't lose much from last year. Malik Dorton is gone, but Christian Rector's back. Brandon Peely's back. Jay Tufele is back. Marlon Tuipulotu is back. Jacob Lichtenstein is back. All these guys that either were, you know, impressive players for USC last year, at least showed signs of life, or you have hope for, are all back. And it's an interesting position because they're in a little bit of a transitional phase, changing from what at one point was a 2-man front to a 3-man front to potentially a 4-man front this fall. How do you feel about this group in general going into the season?
I think a lot hinges on this group. Unfortunately, coming off 5-7, there are a lot of position groups that we're going to talk about having a lot hinging on them. But part of me thinks that what happens to the rest of the defense this year, talking about rebuilding the secondary, talking about adjusting to new alignments with the linebacker group, all of those things are going to be built on top of whatever USC does on the defensive line. I think the biggest problem last year for USC's defense, aside from putting injuries and all of that kind of stuff aside, was really just that the defensive line didn't perform at the level that they needed them to. USC needs their defensive line to be producing havoc plays, to be getting to the quarterback, to be rattling opposing backfields, and frankly, they just didn't do it enough. They were pretty much like the almost men or something like that. Like, Christian Rector was close, but didn't get, you know, half of the sacks that he could have gotten. And once Port Augustine was gone, they just didn't consistently produce those Havoc plays that you needed them to produce. And that pretty much set the tone for everything, because when you're not doing those things, you're kind of leaving your secondary and stuff out to dry. And as impressive as like Porter Gustin was, since we're going to talk about the defensive line now, including that Predator spot, if it even still technically exists, Porter Gustin, as impressive as he was leading the team in tackles for loss, leading the team in sacks, that he led the team in tackles for loss and sacks and only played in 6 games kind of says everything, doesn't it?
It does. USC's defense last year left a lot to be desired. I thought there were instances where they were the most impressive side of the ball for USC, but how much of that is an indictment on the offense? A lot of it, right? But I think for the most part, it's that this defense was young last year, and this, I think the coaches can play the offense was young card, but I think it made more sense on the defense, and I think that a lot of people gave the defense a little bit more benefit of the doubt than the offense, because the offense had so many guys back last year, and they're going to have a lot of guys back this year too. But you saw it with the defensive line, because Marlon Tuipulotu was a redshirt freshman last year, and Brandon Peely was going into his sophomore year, and Christian Rector wasn't an all-out starter until he, took over for Porter Gustin again. And you had these guys who were still coming into their own, and they did that last year as the season went on, but they still just didn't take that step forward to get the ultimate production statistically, which is what you want to see this year. You want to see all that stuff come down to actually producing the numbers that you just didn't see last year.
Yeah, and I think you bring up Christian Rector not being, sort of figuring out who Christian Rector was and where he was supposed to be in relation to Porter Gustin. He practiced spring camp. He practiced all fall camp as a defensive end. He was supposed to be the third man in that front. And then as soon as Porter Gustin goes down, he's back shifted out to that outside linebacker spot, which,
right,
he was the only one capable of filling in for Porter Gustin, but it's also that position was made for Porter Gustin, more or less. And I talked about this on another podcast, or maybe it was with the Wildcat Radio guys, where I was talking about how, the defense was, they were still running a defensive scheme that worked in 2016 when they had Stevie Tuikulavatu, Rasheem Green, Achenna Nwosu, and Porter Gustin. You could do a two-man front with two outside linebackers in that front, and it would work out because you had that personnel. You got further away from it in 2017, but you still had the production because you had Rasheem Green, and you had Achenna Nwosu, and you had partially Porter Gustin. But once you got further out from that in 2018, you don't have those guys anymore, and you're trying to fit square pegs and round holes. And Christian Rector, to me, is a guy that you could look at and say, well, part of the reason that he wasn't as effective in 2018 as he had been in moments in 2017 and otherwise is because he was once again playing the square peg and round hole role. And this year, based on what they said in spring camp, the idea with him is very much to let him be a defensive end and not try to ask him to do anything more than just have his hand in the dirt and go get the quarterback. And I think that might be the kind of thing that makes a huge difference for him as a player, but also for this defense, the defensive line in particular overall, is that the front that they're moving to is a reflection of the personnel that they have instead of trying to fit the personnel that they have into the ideas that worked 2 years before, but with different players.
Yeah, and I want to see if that allows him to be more consistent, because that's been the problem with Christian Rector. He's someone that we know can be a dynamic player and a huge playmaker for USC on defense. We've seen it. He was a midseason All-American like 2 years ago, right? Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of that in him. The problem is just the consistency. And you look at last year, he had 9 tackles for loss. 7 came in 2 games. He had 4.5 sacks. All of that came in 2 games at Utah and at Oregon. And if I remember right, like, it was all the first half of that Utah game. He was in the backfield on every single play, and he was either, unable to make the tackle, or he was making a huge impact play and, setting Utah back for a loss. And that stuff is great when he can get those plays, but you want to see consistency from him, and you want to see consistency from Jay Tufele, who's still developing, and from Marlon Tuipulotu, who's still developing, and from Brandon Peely, who had a sophomore year that kind of took a step back from what we expected from him as a freshman, where he kind of outdid his freshman expectations. So it's kind of an interesting year in that sense from those four guys, but you also get to see what happens with Connor Murphy. And I think Connor Murphy is kind of the biggest wild card here because he gets a chance at defensive end. He was previously a Predator, then they moved him in. Last year, he ended up redshirting. What happens to Connor Murphy this year in a new look defensive front with Clancy Pendergast? Is this the year we finally see what people were expecting when SC signed him 3 years ago?
Well, if he can't make it work this year, then he just can't make it work flat out. Like, that's the thing is, he clearly didn't suit the outside linebacker position the way that they were trying to do. The experiment of him moving back inside was pretty much nixed because of health issues that he had. He couldn't keep on weight because of a health problem, and that he's now through that. But he's now going to be in a situation where this feels like the more natural place for him to begin with. Kind of like Christian Rector. He's obviously a little bit slimmer than Christian Rector, but you expect him to continue to put on weight and then just have his hand in the dirt and go after the quarterback, which was what he was good at when he was coming out of high school. So I agree with you. I think he is the big, well, he is the big wild card in a group full of wild cards. I think once you get away from those initial four guys that you talk about, everyone behind them are guys that you look at and go like, man, there's something there, but I don't know if I'm going to bank on it yet. And based on his spring camp performance, I think that Connor Murphy has certainly set himself up to be in the conversation there. He does need to continue to add some bulk, and he does need to continue to prove that he deserves to be out on the field, because quite frankly, there's going to be a ton of competition behind for those defensive end spots that are, you know, that is not filled by Christian Rector, whether it is subbing in for Christian Rector or playing opposite him. You got Connor Murphy, who we agree is a wild card. Caleb Tremblay, who is almost an injury wild card. We expected more from him last year, but he dealt with injury. And we haven't even mentioned Drake Jackson yet, who is the ultimate high ceiling guy on that defensive front for USC. So, and Nick Figueroa, also another JUCO transfer that USC is going to try and get something out of. So Connor Murphy is going to have tons of competition, but the nice thing about it that I'm looking forward to is, and this is very much a Pete Carroll mindset, like, competition is good and the cream of the crop will rise. And Connor Murphy may be that guy. Maybe that guy is Drake Jackson. Maybe that guy is Caleb Tremblay. I genuinely don't know right now, but we're set up for a very, very intriguing fall camp as a result, because I can see any one of those guys pushing forward and making their stand.
Yeah, I think that's why I like this unit out of everything. I know we tend to do this every single year. We talk about a unit that has a bunch of hopeful guys and a bunch of talented and, promising players that have flashed but necessarily haven't put it together, and there's a big group of them, and you say this might be end up being the best unit because there's so much depth that, you know, two of these guys are bound to be studs, and yeah, maybe one or two will get hurt or be disappointing, but there's so much depth that they're going to prove to be, you know, good as a unit. And I think this might be that unit for USC, particularly on defense, when you have so many defensive ends like Rector and Murphy and Tremblay and Lichtenstein and Figueroa and Jackson and all these guys that can kind of compete there, because, yeah, Rector has a job, you would have to say, but the other one is completely wide open. And then inside, Peely, Tufele, Tuipulotu, Trouts, Tafo'o, like, there's these dudes. There's just so many dudes. Someone's going to race to the top.
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of the thing, too. The years that we've been covering this team, Michael, I the defensive line never had very good depth at all. And last year it had better depth, but it also, it felt like there was more dead weight. And I don't want to say like dead weight in a sense of, in like a negative, but in terms of the guys that you knew you didn't want to see because they weren't ready to play. I always think back to 2017 when Liam Jimmins and Brandon Peely and those guys are getting thrown in there, and you know, you look at them and go like, well, they're doing the best they can, but they weren't ready necessarily for that role. That's why Notre Dame happened that year. That's why that blowout happened. The number of guys in this group where I look at and think he's not ready to play yet is very limited, and it takes a little bit of digging down the depth chart, more so than we've had in the past, at least, because I do feel like Connor Murphy could do a job for USC. I do feel like Caleb Tremblay has the ability to do a job for USC. I like Jacob Lichtenstein a ton as a guy who has developed a ton since he got there. Yep. The only ones that we have the list of everyone in this position group in front of us right now. And the only ones that I'm uncertain of right now at this stage are Trevor Trout. And that's just because he's been injured since he arrived. And I don't know where he's at as far as the defensive tackles go, nose tackles go. I've already seen enough of Nick Figueroa and Drake Jackson to say good hands right there. No big concerns. Stanley Taufu is probably just a little bit underdeveloped as having moved from linebacker to defensive tackle, more or less. I don't know exactly where he's going to line up, but he probably is someone you don't want to see in 2019, because you need him to... He's where Jacob Lichtenstein was a couple of years ago, where he just needs to get his feet wet. And then Dejon Benton, I don't know what Dejon Benton's role is, but I mean, that's what, 3-4 guys out of 15 that I'm looking at going like, I don't want to see them on the field this year. But
there's so much depth that you don't need to, right?
Like, I don't think we're in danger of seeing those guys on the field this year, unless they get that playing time because they've earned it.
Right. Well, plus you're going to have the 4 games to redshirt.
Exactly.
We'll see Dejon Benton at some point. It's just a matter of when, and as long as all those guys stay healthy, everyone will play at some point against somebody, even though there's no Oregon State and there's no UC Davis on this schedule. So,
but one could hope that USC wins a few games, wins a couple games by bigger margins to allow fourth quarter bench clearing, which...
I actually think this is a case of optimistic, Alicia.
When was the last time USC had a solid fourth quarter bench clearing? I can't remember.
It's the quote stained. It's been a while. It's
absolutely, that's a wonderful reference.
Yeah, it's absolutely been a while. There's a lot of dudes here. I think that's what we keep saying. Let's talk about the biggest battle, because inside, let's focus on the inside guys really quick here and talk about the battle there. Tufele has a spot, right? Like, he is going to start. But who's the other tackle? Is it Pili? Is it Tuipulotu? Like, who wins that battle between those two guys? And is that the biggest battle of the defensive front overall?
I believe so, yeah. I mean, I think that's the biggest battle, even though I think that the other defensive end position is probably the most cloudy. But the biggest battle is definitely Tuipulotu and Pili. And I would have guessed going into spring that Tuipulotu would be the guy there. And I would probably, if you forced me to make a prediction here, I'd probably still go with Tuipulotu, specifically because I think that one thing that is really encouraging is that he played a pretty decent season. Like, I always look at his numbers from 2018 and go like, oh, really? He had 4.5 sacks? Like, that's pretty decent numbers for a first year starter. And this was a first year starter who was less than a year removed from back surgery. And my constant refrain on back surgery is it's more than a year before you're back fully and 100% good to go. So now Marlon Tuipulotu is in his second year removed from back surgery. And so my expectations for him as far as his explosiveness and just his strength and physicality and all of those things that come together are much higher. Pili surprised me in spring because he was just much better than I expected him to be. And I think it's also really encouraging because that seemed to be a direct reaction to USC's coaches challenging him. Clay Helton specifically said, or I think it was Clay Helton, it might have been Clancy Pendergast, specifically said that they looked at what he had done in his sophomore season and basically said, that's not good enough. And he took a step back and they challenged him to be better, to put more effort into, to really focus himself on taking that next step. And in spring camp, I thought you could see him respond to that. You could definitely see him respond to that, to the point where I would have guessed that Marlon Tuipulotu would come out and be the guy at the end of spring camp. But increasingly, I would not be surprised if fall camp ends and there's an or next to those names, and it's not like a cop-out kind of or. It's they might trade off back and forth.
Isn't that a best case scenario too?
For sure.
I think that if you're able to roll with kind of all three of those guys, Pili, Tufele, and Tuipulotu, if you can, yeah, if they end up interchangeable, I think that that's such a good thing for USC because you don't want that gap. You don't want, you know, Tuipulotu to be so much better than Pili and that be a detriment for Pili. If Tuipulotu is an All-American and that's the reason that he has a big gap on Pili, that's a different story. But yeah, I mean, if they're interchangeable, that would be fantastic. And I think that that's going to keep guys fresher. And that's kind of like why I like this defensive line, is that there's so many guys that it might force Clancy Pendergast to continue to rotate. We saw much more rotation last year than the year before, than the year before that. You have to think that Pendergast is going to continue to rotate more. Still probably not going to be as much as people would like. But I think when there's this much talent and there's this many veterans on the defensive line, they're going to earn the trust of Clancy Pendergast. And they're going to earn the trust of new defensive line coach Chad Cowhaha. And they're going to be able to essentially create a platoon in that sense. So, which allows SC to move different packages. We were going to see a lot of packages at linebackers. We're talking about linebackers tomorrow. And I think there's optimism there for USC, especially up front.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see how Chad Cowhaha sorts this all out, because he seems to be judging his defensive linemen on slightly different criteria than Kenichi Odese did. And so it's going to be interesting to see how he formulates a pecking order there, and right, who is favored and who is not. And at this point, I don't know, but I've liked what I've heard from him when we've talked to him. So that'll be another factor in who is able to come out and break out and shine from this group. But like you said, like, I think there is a great deal of optimism because you are moving. You remember after 2016, I remember the conversations we all had about, you know, Porter Gustin and Chenna Nwosu had been first-time starters in 2016. They were going to get better in 2017 just by that experience, right? And that came to pass. Both of them were All-American level. Porter Gustin would have been an All-American if he hadn't gotten injured. I'm not saying that Tuipulotu and Tufele are going to be All-Americans, but the experience that those guys now had going into a second year of starting, it's particularly on the defensive line, it matters having guys who are in their third year. That USC was starting a bunch of redshirt freshmen was a problem. Like, that was a failure of the program to have not recruited better the years before and developed better and all that kind of stuff. So for instance, the breakdown of this group as far as the seniors and the juniors and the sophomores, like, it's a much healthier kind of look as far as the numbers that you would like to see and the experience that they have.
No doubt. So if we're looking at this on the defensive tackle side of things, J.J. Valley starts, Tuipulotu and Pili will battle for the other spot, and then you can put Trout, Taufoho, and Benton behind them in any order. That'll figure out itself during fall camp. But
and arguably Jacob Lichtenstein, because he's kind of a utility defensive lineman, so they'll use him
the Malik
there.
Dorton?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
So let's talk about the defensive ends then. Christian Rector, we'll just ink him in to one spot.
Yes. On the
gun
left.
Gun to your head, who starts the other side?
Oh, Lordy. Assuming that he has as good of a fall camp as he had a spring camp, assuming that he takes another step forward, Drake Jackson just looks like a bang-on starter. Like, you don't compare a dude to Leonard Williams and Rasheem Green and all those guys the way that they are with him if you're not really, really confident in what he's going to become. So I think that Drake Jackson will, maybe it's more 50-50 on whether he'll be a day one starter.
Mm-hmm.
And if not, I'll probably go Connor Murphy. But I just think Jackson's going to be a starter sooner than later.
And then how much do you think that it comes down to a platoon system based on package? Because I think that's pretty likely, right? That,
yeah.
That you're going to see Drake Jackson, you're going to see Nick Figueroa, you're going to see Lichtenstein and Tremblay, and if Murphy can take hold to this defensive end spot, you're going to see him. I think they're going to find a way to get those guys onto the field in certain packages, and that'll make it easier to plug and play rather than just having one guy take all those reps.
Well, that'll be a reflection of what the players do, particularly in fall camp. Because
for sure,
we know this is Clancy Pendergast. We're not going to kid ourselves. If the best players are out there and the other guys don't step up, then there is a strong probability that you will see a defensive line of Christian Rector, Jay Tufele, Marlon Tupelotu, and you know, Drake Jackson, and those are the only guys you ever see. Like, that's entirely possible. If you see Connor Murphy, if you see Caleb Tremblay, Jacob Lichtenstein, Nick Figueroa, it's because those guys have earned it. Like, I, like everyone else, I have been frustrated by Clancy Pendergast and his unwillingness to play guys for one reason or another. But the one thing I do like about it is that you know that guys who are playing are doing so because the coaches are 1,000% confident in them. And so if you see a guy out there, it's like there's no question about what the coach's opinion of him is. He's got
what the coach's opinion is, of him is. But there's still other questions. I mean, just to look back to the UCLA game and Ruben Peters. I mean,
yes,
we can talk about that discussion maybe in the linebackers.
Paul Ianateote not playing in that game spoke volumes about what the feelings about his trustworthiness was. Right. And I'm not saying that this is the right way to do it. But in terms of being able to interpret personnel moves, it's very black and white. So for our interpretation purposes, it kind of makes it easy to understand where guys stand. That's all I'm saying. So again, if we see Connor Murphy, it's because Connor Murphy is in the coach's good graces. And if we don't see him, then there's no question why he's not in there, because he's not in the coach's good graces. And the reasons behind that could be valid or invalid. I don't know. But
right. At least, as seen with Ruben Peters.
Yes. So, example number one. Yeah.
That is the bright side of it, is that there's a clear
clarity.
There is some sort of clarity in the murkiness of it all, mm-hmm. kind of. But I still think they're going to still mix in packages there. But like you said, it's going to be dependent on if those guys prove that they're worthy, whoever that it ends up being. They're going to have to prove themselves to Clancy Pendergast and to Chad Kahaha. So we'll see that in the defensive line. One player to watch that you want to see more than anything in this group as a whole?
I'm going to actually go with Caleb Tremblay. We didn't really get to talk a lot about him. And I already said my piece about Drake Jackson. Caleb Tremblay, I think, is
somebody the most to prove.
He might. I it's been so long since I've seen him. He was very good last offseason, and then he's just been unhealthy, like unavailable. And being unavailable is a problem, obviously. But what we saw of him last year in the offseason was strong enough of a showing to suggest that he could be a starter for USC. And so when we talk about, well, who will be the starting four in this group, does Caleb Tremblay have a role? Where is that role? Because it's been so long since we've seen him play. I don't know if they're going to line him up at tackle, at end, at whatever variant thereof. So Caleb Tremblay, a healthy Caleb Tremblay, will have a ton to prove, because there aren't a lot of opportunities on this defensive line. Like we talked about, three of the four positions are pretty well locked into four players. And playing time outside of those guys is going to revolve around sort of show me something here. And I think Caleb Tremblay has a lot to show, because he's a guy that there were big expectations for, and he hasn't been able to live up to them.
Yeah. Same thing with Connor Murphy, for different reasons. I would love to see Connor Murphy prove it. I think that there's a lot there, and I think he's 100% capable. And I want to see what he can do.
Yeah. I mean, just from a storytelling perspective, Connor Murphy succeeding would be a great story, I think, especially because think of all the ways that we could fit in the ginger mullet kind of discussions that can go on. Like,
oh dear.
I'm rooting for him too.
All right. I'm just rooting for him because he's Connor Murphy, but you can root for him before the hair. That's fine.
The hair is part of it.
All right. That's going to wrap up our first preview, position preview for Patreon. Thanks for listening. As always, we'll be back tomorrow to talk about the linebackers, which is an interesting group because they're in a big transition too. The defensive line position group has kind of gotten bigger, and the linebacker position has kind of gotten smaller, even though USC has a million linebackers. So we'll talk about that tomorrow here on Patreon. Thanks for listening, as always. Until then, see ya.
See ya.
See ya.